Okay, we're starting here in the middle of Lamed Vavam and Aleph, Umechasinet Peirot. Amar Ula. In terms of covering over fruits, not only can you cover over fruits, Amar Ula, Bafilu, Avera Delivne, even a row of bricks you can cover over. Rav Yitzchok Amar Peirot Haru'in, Va'azda Rav Yitzchok L'tamei. Rav Yitzchok says only Peirot that are edible and usable on Yom Tov, and this is Rav Yitzchok L'shitato. You can only utilize a kli, move a kli, for an object that is usable on Shabbat. So as opposed to who we saw earlier, Rabbi Nechemia, who has an opinion about you can only carry a kli for primary purpose of the kli, over here Rabbi Yitzchak has a different approach to mukso, which is you can only carry a kli for the purpose of an object that is not mukzah or not problematic. So Rav Nechemia, who would say, for instance, about a knife, you can only use a knife for the cutting of food because that is its primary purpose. Rav Yitzchak would say you could use a knife for any purpose as long as the object to which you are cutting is mutar on Shabbat or mutar on Yom Tov. So over here, Rav Yitzchak says you can only cover fruits that you could utilize on Yom Tov because they're not mukzah. So you can take the covering and place it over the fruits. What you can't cover, obviously, are the bricks. Bricks which are not able to be used on Yom Tov, you can't go ahead and cover them. So that's what Rav Yitzchok says. Rav Yitzchok says the object that you're covering has to be something that is not mukzah, whereas Ula is suggesting that you can cover anything. If you're protecting them from the rain, you could take this sheet or whatever item it is that's not mukzah that you're allowed to utilize, and you can cover over whatever object it is that you intend to cover over, including a row of bricks. So now the Gemara asks on Ula's position, it's not our Mishnah. V'chassinat ha-peirot b'keilim. Peirot in, avira delivne lo. So here our Mishnah seems to indicate the only thing you can cover is peirot, fruits, but a row of bricks we wouldn't let you cover. Hu'adin da'afilu avira delivne. Ula answers, no, our Mishnah would have said even a row of bricks is fine to cover. Because the Mishnah is talking about fruits, about lowering the fruits from the roof, it continued along those lines of talking about fruit. It's not. The next line in our Mishnah is, you're allowed to cover over the fruits, and then you're allowed to cover over the barrels of wine or barrels of oil. Where it says, what type of barrels are we speaking about here? Betivlo. We're talking about barrels that are holding tevel inside of them. Hachanami mistavro. That makes a lot of sense. Disakadatcho kade yain vikade shemen tehetero. If you think that it's talking about barrels of wine and shemen that are usable and are not muksa, then hatanale resha peirot. You already wrote in the beginning of the Mishnah about peirot. So the Gemara's suggestion here, or question on Ula again, is our Mishnah enumerates certain items that you're allowed to cover. So it mentioned peirot, which seems to say peirot yes, other things not. Ula's answer is, that's a continuation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah uses the word peirot to mashilin to peirot to start with. So peirot, it continues with. So the Gemara says, okay, that's a nice explanation, but what about the next piece of the Mishnah, which says also kade yain and kade shemen? There you can't argue that it's connected to peirot. There they gave you another item. Now if that item is something that's usable on Yom Tov, the Mishnah now enumerated three things that are usable on Yom Tov, which are peirot, kadei shemen, and kadei yain, and only those are items that you're allowed to cover. I don't see bricks anywhere over here. Ula's answer is no. The kadei shemen, the kadei yain, and the Mishnah are not regular barrels of wine and oil that you can use in Yom Tov. They are full of tevel. They are mukzah. So Gemara says, you know what? Ula's answer makes sense, because otherwise the Mishnah is telling you information that's not necessary. If I can cover over fruits, then why would you think I can't cover over barrels of wine and barrels of shemen? They should be in the same category in terms of covering them over. So what's the chiddush that the Mishnah added in besides peirot, kadei shemen, kadei yain? If you say they're tevel and they're actually items of mukzah, then it makes sense that it added those items. It tells you not only can you cover fruits, you can also cover over wine and oil that are tevel. So that would be the chiddush of the Mishnah. Gemara says no, kadei yain v'kadei shemen itzrichalei. Now we do need kadei yain v'kadei shemen. Salkadatcho amino, I would have thought the hefsid merubeh chashashu, the hefsid muat, lo chashashu. I would think that here we're talking about a leak in the house or rain that's falling on this. So the hefsid merubeh chashashu. When it comes to a large loss, then we allowed you to protect the items. He said, fine, you can roll them off the roof, you can cover the fruits. But here, when you're talking about barrels of wine or barrels of shemen, which aren't going to get ruined as much. First of all, they're sealed, hopefully. And even the Rashi suggests over here that the little bit of water that comes down won't affect the wine necessarily. It's not going to be so bad for it. So therefore, they did not give you a dispensation to cover them. Kamash Malon, that you're allowed to cover all these items. So far, the way the Gemara is reading our Mishnah, we have no item of muksa that you're allowed to cover. You're only allowed to cover things that are usable on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Those are fruits, or Kadeh Shemen and Kadeh Yayin. Tznan. Notnim kli tachat adelech b'Shabbat. You're allowed to put a kli under a drip on Shabbat. Now here, the question is posed against Rav Yitzchak, which is that according to Rav Yitzchak, you're not allowed to capture things that are muksa inside of a kli, or use a kli for something that is muksa. So over here, we're allowing you to put a bowl or any cup to capture the leak that's coming in through the house. So here, you're using it for something that could easily be muksa, could be problematic, and yet we're allowing you to do it. Where it says, no problem, but delef haro'oi. We're talking about a drip that is ra'oi. Ra'oi meaning potable. Potable water that's coming down. So Rashi says, shein slulin, clear, good water, v'ru'in the behema. And a behema can drink from it. The way the Shulchan Aruch, when he quotes it, he says, delef ra'oi, calls it something that you could be rochets, that you could wash in. Mishnah Berurah says that that doesn't necessarily literally have to be washed in. It just has to be water that is usable on Yom Tov or Shabbat. But that means that you can drink it, it's potable, whether it means that an animal can drink it or you can wash with it. As long as the water is usable, then it's fine in terms of capturing and putting a kli to capture it there. What's interesting here is that the Gemara's answer is only in the position of Rabbi Yitzchak. The question's on Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak holds that you can't capture muksa in a kli. You can't bring a kli over to capture muksa. The Gemara's answer is, v'delef ha-ra'oi. Talking about a drip that is not muksa. For the Rabbanon, it doesn't matter. Whether the drip is muksa or the drip is not muksa, the Rabbanon permits you to use a kli. So if you were to give a psak aloch over here, so you would think or you would assume that you would paskin like the Rabbanon and not like Rabbi Yitzchak. So what's very interesting here is that the Shulchan Aruch writes, mutar litein kli tachat adelef b'Shabbat. The Gemara will tell us in the continuation, the second half of today's daf, if it fills up, you can dump it and bring it back. That's only if it is ro'oi l'rechitza. So here, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, he's paskins like the Rambam, who says that the qualification here of delef ro'oi is the halacha, even though it was only said in the shita of Rabbi Yitzchak. What's interesting is that the Tur, when he quotes this halacha, the Tur says, "Aval gulei alma yochel liten kli tachat adelef va'afilu b'Shabbat." Everybody agrees you can put a utensil under the drip on Shabbat. V'nit malei shofcho makziro l'mekomo, and if it fills up, you can dump it out. V'kot of a Rambam zal v'hu she'ed delef ro'oi l'chitza. He says it's only if the drip is usable water. V'lo nehira. The Tur says, I don't think the Rambam's right. Daha demukim labi gemara hachi. Why did the Gemara set it up this way? I know dafka the Rabbi Yitzchak. That's only according to Rabbi Yitzchak. Whereas according to me, demar ain't kli nital, letzorach davar nital. Vein halacha kamoto. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yitzchak. So if the halacha is not like Rabbi Yitzchak, then you don't need this qualification of delef ha-ra'oi. Therefore, the Tur believes that you can capture any type of water in a kli on Shabbat. Whereas the Shulchan Aruch paskening in the line of the Rambam says that you can only capture water that is usable on Shabbat or Yom Tov. Very interesting, halachically. The Be'er Halacha there notes that clear here that the Shulchan Aruch is following the position of the Rambam. But later on, the Shulchan Aruch writes that you're not allowed to capture non-potable or usable water. But if you do it, then you can dump it out, and you can keep dumping it out. Be'er Halacha points out that in a Tzorach Gadol, you could be sumech on the Tur, and capture water that is not ra'oi. In addition to that, he says, what about people who wash negelbasser by their bed? When you wash negelbasser by your bed, you pour the water onto your hands into a bowl, and that bowl captures the water, which is no longer usable. The water has now a ruach ra'ah, is dirty water, and you're not allowed to use that water afterwards, but it's going into a bowl that's right by your bed. Or at the table, when you're washing mayim achronim, when you pour the mayim achronim onto your hands into a bowl, into a capture. Also, the mayim achronim you can't use afterwards, and yet you're putting them into a kli. So it seems like those halachot that we're passing like the Tur, that we allow you to do it. In the end, the Be'er Halacha says, maybe the only time we said it's problematic is when the water is problematic because it's not potable at all. It's not usable water. Here, the water is usable. The only ma'akev is a ruach ra or an isur. Maybe that doesn't make it into water that's muksa enough to ruin the kli. So he says, maybe that's how we can explain that, even according to the Shulchan Aruch. But it seems in all of these issues that we're passing, like the Torah, that even when the water is not usable, we allow you to put it into a bowl. And he says again, Bitzarach Gadol, you can definitely be someich on the Torah here, because that really seems to be the nature or the way that the Gemara is moving, because the Gemara is answering for Rabbi Yitzchak, not for the Rabbanon. Obviously, those that disagree say that there's a problem of Avatel Kli Mehechano, which is that when you put the Kli down and you capture something that's Muksa, then you lock the Kli in place. You can't pick up the Kli anymore because it has Muksa in it and you're capturing Muksa. And that's a problem. Maybe they're Bona Soter, depending on different Rashis in the Gemara and Shabbat. But that's maybe the problem that the Rambam is dealing with and why he thinks that even for the Rabbanon, there's a problem here of a Delef She'enu Ra'oi.
But you can dump it out.
Correct, that's because of Graf Shorei, so that's a dispensation to move it, but technically the Kli is locked in place, right? But we have a separate dispensation of Graf Shorei. Alright, Tashma, Porsin Machatzelet Agabe Levini V'Shabbat. You're allowed to put over a cover, a reed mat of some sort over the bricks on Shabbat. So here, again, a problem for Rabbi Yitzchak. Here we're saying that you're allowed to put a cover over something that's Mukse. When it says, Diyator Mibinyono, they were left over from building, but you can sit on them. They're good for a little bench or to use as a place that you can put things down. So since they're usable, on Yom Tov, they don't exactly have their status of mukse, and they're also left over from the binyan. Yes, they are bricks, but they're not before your building where you don't know how many you're going to use and it's mukse for the building. You already finished the building and they're left over. Now technically they're still mukse, but because they also have this secondary usage, which is to sit on them, then you have the ability to do things for them because they're not completely muksa, they're not completely designated for that purpose. Tashma, porsim machatzelet agabe avanim b'shabbat. So now you're allowed to put over a mat over rocks on Shabbat. Now over here, rocks are clearly muksa machmat gufo. They're inherently muksa, and yet we're allowing you to cover them on Shabbat. So again, that's a problem for Rabbi Yitzchak. So Mar says, bavanim mukur zalot. No problem. These are toilet paper stones. The chazian, the beta kise, that you can use when you go to the bathroom. In their day, they used these smooth stones in order to wipe themselves when they went to the bathroom. So here you have a bunch of these smooth stones that are gathered together. Those stones are not the muksa because they're utilized as toilet paper in the bathroom. Tashma, porsim machatzelet agabei kveret dvorim. You're allowed to put over a mat over a honeycomb, a beehive. B'Shabbat, b'chamam yipnei chamam Shabbat because of the sun or the heat, u'b'gshamim yipnei gshamim, or in the rain because of the rain. U'b'vad shelo yitkavin latzud, as long as you don't intend to capture the bees inside there. The Gemara says, hatamnami dikadrash. That's not a problem, there's honey inside. So the honey makes it not mukse, because you can go get the honey. It's not so simple because being roded vash, or scraping out a honeycomb on Shabbat is not necessarily allowed. But assuming that the honey is there or accessible to you, so the covering of it is not just for muksa, it's not just for the beehive or for the honeycomb, it's for the honey itself. Amalei Ravuk from Emesha and the Ravashi. Hati nach bimotachama. That makes sense in the summertime, dika dvash, because then there's honey. Bimotach shamim in the wintertime, maika lameimar. What are you talking about? There's no honey left in the honeycomb during the winter. In the summertime, you scrape out. That's when you take all the honey. There's no honey left in the wintertime. What are you covering over? What type of honey are you covering over? So lo nitzu chalotan shtei chalot. It's only needed for those two rows that they leave behind. Take a honeycomb and you scrape out the honey in order to utilize the honey. You have to leave a section of the comb or the hive for the bees themselves. They collect the honey for themselves in order that they can survive the winter, and they use that as their food during the winter when flowers and other things are not readily available for them to produce honey. So that honey, when you take out the comb, you have to leave a section of it over to allow the bees to survive so that they can, the next year, produce again and still be there. If you don't leave them any food, the bees aren't going to be around the next year. So you leave these shtei chalot for the bees themselves. So that's what he says. In the wintertime, those two combs, those two rows of the comb that you left over, they are what we're talking about, you're covering those over to protect the honey inside of them. So Mar says, wait a minute. Otan shtei chalot muksotein. Those two chalot are muksa. You don't intend to eat that honey. That honey you're leaving for the bees. So you put that out of your mind. You're not thinking about that. So that's equivalent to the comb itself or the hive itself, because you're not going to eat that honey. So he decided, he changed his mind, he's going to eat that honey. So he has it during the winter because he left it over, and now he decides he wants to eat that honey. Aval lo chishev aleihem, if he didn't intend to eat them, ma'ai, what would be the din asur? Then it would be problematic. So Gemara says, adatani uvach lo itkavin latsud. Why does this braita, in describing to us the point that's heter and the point that is isur, explains, well, the covering over the hive is fine. What's not okay is if you intend to capture the bees. Liflog v'litnei b'didol. You could have an internal, more fine distinction within the braita itself, which is, b'med v'im amurim shechishev aleihem. When is that true? When he intends to eat the honey from those two rows that he left over for the bees. V'lochishev aleihem asur. He doesn't think that he's going to eat them, then it's asur. So you could get a heter and isur here on a much finer distinction than saying, as long as you don't want to capture the bees being the point of isur. Achin kamar, this is what it means. Afopi shechishev aleihem, uvach lo itkavein latsud. Even if you intend to eat the honey, you still can't cover them if you're going to end up capturing the bees. You intend to capture the bees. So bayu kimto. So let's understand this braita now. You set up this braita, kirabi Yehuda, ditle muksa. Set up like a Yehuda who holds of muksa, because otherwise there wouldn't be a problem with the honey or the shtei chalot, the two rows that you left over for the bees. The only reason they're problematic is because they're muksa. Muksa is the realm of Rabbi Yehuda, not of Rabbi Shimon. As Rashi points out over here, the reason that we're saying it is Rabbi Yehuda, and we don't just say the whole Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon, and then Rabbi Yitzchak could get out of his problem, to say this Mishnah is according to Rabbi Shimon, I don't hold like Rabbi Shimon. But the problem is that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yitzchak himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he wants to set it up like Rabbi Yehuda, because he thinks Rabbi Yehuda is the halacha. That's what Rashi says. Rabbi Yehuda bait the ukma. He wants to set up like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yitzchak the motvinen lei hanach tiyufta it lei muksa like Rabbi Yehuda. He holds that there is muksa like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he prefers to set up the braita as being a braita that's in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda rather than the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, even though it would solve his problem. So he'd rather give a more difficult answer and have Rabbi Yehuda be the author than give an answer that is just Rabbi Shimon and it's not relevant. He passes like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he'd rather have the braita support the position of Rabbi Yehuda. So now the Gemara says, okay, you think that it's muksa here, so it's like Rabbi Yehuda. Ema seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of the braita? It says, uvad shelo itkavin latsud. As long as you don't intend to capture the bees. Aton the Rabbi Shimon. That's according to Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara, dover shein itkavin mutar. That if you don't intend to do something, then it's mutar. So now you have a braita that's made up of different positions. One time Rabbi Yehuda and one time Rabbi Shimon. You have half a braita that's talking about muksa, which is the realm of Rabbi Yehuda. And you have another half of the braita that's talking about dover shein itkavin is mutar, which is Rabbi Shimon. So you're taking one part the position of Rabbi Yehuda, one part the position of Rabbi Shimon. Now truthfully, it's not so difficult because the reasons behind the two different positions are totally separate. So you could argue that way. But generally, we don't find braitot that mix and match opinions. They generally follow a single opinion. Otherwise, you'd expect them to say something about it or have a mesora that there are two authors to the braita. So the fact that it's split doesn't make so much sense. Mar says, wait a minute. Vitizbra the Rabbi Shimon? Wait a minute. Are you really so sure that Rabbi Shimon's the author of the latter half of this braita? Well, it says, davar sheim itkavin is mutar. But over here, it's not a davar sheim itkavin. It's a problem of psik reshe. That Rabbi Shimon agrees in a case where it's inevitable that the outcome will be this, that it's no longer davar sheim itkavin. If you throw a cloth or you throw some sort of cover over the beehive for the honeycomb, the bees, even if you don't intend to capture them, will be captured. There's no other way to do it. You covered them, they're stuck. If they're stuck, you capture them. Even if it's davar sheim itkavin, it's not intentional. You have psik reshe, which is it's automatic. It's an inevitable outcome of your action. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees in that case that you're chayav, that it's problematic. So the Mar says, Olam kulo Rabbi Yehuda hi. The whole braita is authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Och of my eskina. And so then how do you explain it? Did bekave. The cover you put on it has windows in it. It has openings in it. So you cover over the comb or the hive in order to protect it from the rain, protect it from whatever item. We have now assumed that whatever's in there is usable. So either there's honey in it, or even if it was the two rows that you left over for the bees themselves, you decided you wanted to eat it. So now you have honey, and that's why you're allowed to cover it according to Rabbi Yitzchak. Ah, what about the problem of tzad, problem that you're capturing the bees? this cover that you put on, it has on the sides, it has openings that the bees can escape through. Since it has those openings, it's not a problem of tzad. So Gemara says, V'lo teima l'Rabbi Yehuda, u'bavaj lo yitkavin l'tzut, ela, eima u'bavaj shal yasena mitzuda. So for Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't matter whether you intend to capture or not intend to capture, because for Rabbi Yehuda, davar she'eino mitgaven is asur. It's problematic. So here you tell me, okay, I put a cover on it with windows in it. So what does it matter whether you intend to capture or not intend to capture? That's not relevant according to Rabbi Yehuda. So he says, okay, you have to amend the braita. The lashon is not uvaj lo yitkaven latsud, but rather, halachin kamar, it should say, uvaj lo yasena mitzuda. Don't make it into a trap. How do you not make it into a trap? You leave windows on the sides that it's not a trap. It says, pshita. What are you thinking? Why would you think that you could trap the bees? And why do you not need windows? That's true of anything you do. You can't trap animals. You can't cover them over. Of course you have to leave windows. By this point, you're already, everything's straightforward. You're not teaching us any chiddush anymore. Where it says, no. Maudutim, I would have thought, bimino nutsud asur. Animals that are normally captured, that is asur to capture them. Shlobimino nutsud. Animals that are not generally captured, mutar, because nobody intends to capture them. Nobody throws blankets over bees to capture bees. Nobody captures bees in general. That's not the way that you would trap them. So there you would think that it's not a problem, kamash v'lon, that even though bees are not generally captured, nevertheless, if you capture them, then it's a problem on Shabbat. And therefore, when you put over a cover on them, you have to leave openings for the bees to escape. Ravashi amar, Ravashi solves the problem of the bright a different way for Rav Yitzchak, a much simpler solution, which is, Miktani bimotach chama bimotach shamim. The Braita doesn't say you can cover it in the summertime, or you can cover it in the wintertime. It says, b'chama mipnei chama. When it's hot out, you can cover it to protect it from the sun. U'b'shamim, and when it's rainy, you can protect it from the rain. It doesn't tell you what season we're talking about. It simply tells you that it's hot, sunny, or raining. Now, obviously in Israel, the seasons are determined. If it's raining, it's winter. If it's sunny, it's generally the summertime. That could be the winter time, but generally it's the summertime. But he explains it this way. It could be the time period when you have a mix, where it could be hot, or it could be raining, which is the interim seasons, the shoulder seasons, the spring and the fall. And that's what he says over here. Tani, b'yomi de Nisan or b'yomi de Tishrei. So since it says, kamak b'nei chamak shemim b'nei chamim tani, b'yomi de Nisan, b'yomi de Tishrei. It's in the spring and the fall. Dika chamo, b'yika shemim. There are days that are very hot. And there are also days that it rains, v'ikad vash, and there's also honey in the comb at those periods of time. So because of that, you can explain the bright in that way, and you don't have to go through all this trouble. What you're interesting over here is, what is Rabbi Shimon's opinion in the end? Gemara in the end, it says, the whole bright here is speaking in the position of Rabbi Yehuda, at least not according to Rav Ashi's answer, according to the first answer we gave. The whole bright is in Shita Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, first of all, whatever's inside of there has to be usable, at least according to Rabbi Yitzchak. Because he holds a Rabbi Yehuda that can't cover Motsa, so it has to be usable. But then we said on top of that, when you cover it, you have to leave openings for the bees to escape. That's all in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The way Rashi seems to indicate, this is all in Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. According to Rabbi Shimon, you can cover it over, no problem, even without windows. So Tosafot raises the issue, wait a minute. Didn't the Gemara just say that's a psik reshe? So how, even according to Rabbi Shimon, could you cover it over without any openings? So Tosafot gives an answer, which is a big chiddush, extremely novel type of answer here. He says, "Uperish Rab Moshe mi'ivra." To the Rabbi Shimon nami mayre sheish chor katan bakveret, that there is a small hole from the comb or from the beehive. Achenu nira, it's not visible. V'im kein lavi psik reishay v'lo yomut. It's not psik reishay because there is an escape hatch. Even though the bees can't easily find it, it's not visible. Nevertheless, since there is an escape hatch, that's enough. Ola Rabbi Shimon mutar. According to Rabbi Shimon, that's mutar. Ola Rabbi Yehuda the asar afil davar sheino mitkavein ba'ichor gadol. You need a much larger opening. Sheinira the dvarim let's say min akaveret. It should be visible for them to escape from the hive to get out of this covering. So what's amazing over here is that he differentiates between the position of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Now in the end, we're saying that Rabbi Shimon believes that psik reishis is a problem. And Rabbi Yehuda believes psik reishe is a problem, but Rabbi Yehuda, in addition to that, believes that davar she'eino mitkaven is also problematic. The Rav Moshe Me'ivra in the Tosafot differentiates in davar she'eino mitkaven that will also determine what type of solution you need to get rid of the problem. Rabbi Shimon's solution to the problem of psik reishe is simply a small hole. Even if it's not visible. The mere fact that they can escape is enough to make it not psik reishe and davar she'eino mitkaven. All right, so it happens to be, what you're mentioning is a machloket amongst the Rishonim, which is psik reshe. How high a probability does it have to become psik reshe? Is a 5% chance it doesn't happen, is that enough to get rid of psik reshe? Or do you have to have a reasonable assumption that it won't happen? Do you need like a 30, 40% chance in order for it not to be psik reshe? Over here, Rav Moshe Maivra is seeing like it could be a 5, a 2% chance, and that's enough to get rid of psik reshe. But in addition to that, what he's saying here is that dover she'eno mitkavein is determined by the size of the hole. If you just have a small hole, according to Rabbi Shimon, okay, then you're not intending to capture them, and it's okay. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there's an escape hole here. But because the escape hole was just so small and not visible, that's not enough to make it as if it is not letzud. You have to have a big hole. Even if you don't intend to capture them, you have this little hole there. Nevertheless, that's not enough for Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda would require a much bigger hole, because he holds that that still would be mitkavein even when you have that small hole. It's a very interesting differentiation within the sheet of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda in Dover She'eno Mitkavein. Something that we don't generally see, that their positions differentiated within the Meloch of Dover She'eno Mitkavein, that they actually would have different views as to when it's considered to be just Dover She'eno Mitkavein, or that you're not capturing anymore. But Rabbi Moshe Ivra is suggesting exactly what you're saying now, which is that the threshold for Rabbi Shimon is just to get it out of psik reshe. For Rabbi Shimon to get to Dover She'eno Mitkavein, away from psik reshe to Dover She'eno Mitkavein, you need just any probability. For Rabbi Yehuda to get out of Dover She'eno Mitkavein, you need a much higher probability. So it's a very interesting differentiation that he makes, and has obviously implications in how you view Dover She'eno Mitkavein for Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. It's something we generally don't see in that type of differentiation in their opinions. So now, continuing, notnim klei tachat adelef b'Shabbat. You're allowed to put a utensil under the drip on Shabbat. Tana, im nitmale akli, if it fills up, shofech, you can pour it out, vishoneh, and you can keep doing this, veno nimna, you don't have to stop. You can keep emptying out the kli, bring it back, empty out the kli, bring it back. Beirich ayod Abaye. Abaye's house had a leak in it. It was a dluf. They had a leak, but it was going on top of his mill. And his mill was made out of tzit, so that the water, if it fell on there, would cause it to dissolve. And it would be a problem for his mill. So it's dripping on there. Atta the kame derabo, he went before his Rebbe Rabo. Amalei zil aile the puryach the hotom. Take your bed and put it next to the mill. Tilhavi ki graf shari'i, because then it'll be a graf shari'i, v'afke, and then you can take it out. Since you're living there and your bed's there, you don't want to drip in a place where your bed is there. That's the one possibility of explaining it. The way Rashi explains it is that if you put your bed there, you don't want a mill where your bed is. And so what you can do is once you put your bed there, you made that your bedroom, you can take the mill out because the mill is in the way of being your bedroom. You don't want a mill in the middle of your bedroom. So if it's Sarach Mekomo, you can get rid of it. So that's the way that Rashi phrases it. Again, you could have phrased it the other way, which is you don't want a drip in a place where your bed is. So you're allowed to capture the drip, not because you're protecting the mill, but because you're protecting your bed. You're protecting your living space. So that was the advice that Rabbah gave to Abaye. So now Abaye worries about this and says, Yativ Abaye, v'kakashale. Based on Rabbah's advice, Abaye was perplexed. V'hichlo sim graf shori l'chatchilo. You're making me make it into a problem l'chatchilo. I mean, that the only reason that the mill is disgusting is because I just made this into my bedroom. Well, I made it into my bedroom only to make it so that I could get rid of the mill. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbat? Are you allowed to create a problem on Shabbat and then you have to remove it? Can you make something dirty only so that you can then remove it afterwards? While he was contemplating this, the whole thing collapsed. His mill collapsed, the rain got to it, and it was gone. Amar Tetili Davre Adamar says that I'm deserving of that because I didn't listen to my Rebbe. Had I just listened to my Rebbe, everything would have been okay. But because I started to question my Rebbe, by the time I got around to doing it, it was already dissolved, the damage was done. So Amar Shmuel, Graf Shorei, Bavit Shel Meme Reglaim, Mutar, Lotzian Lashpa. If you have a Graf Shorei or an Avit Shel Meme Reglaim, these are the same terms for different things, but basically these are buckets that are used to capture waste. So you have Avit Shel Meme Reglaim is like a urinal, and Graf Shorei is something that you defecate into. So you have these two items where they're basically their toilets. They don't have running water. They don't have a way to remove them. So this is the equivalent of their toilets. So once you've relieved yourself into these items, you don't want to keep it around in the house. That's disgusting. So we permit you to remove it from the house. Now, even though the object inside here is muksa. It's not usable. The feces or the urine are not usable. Nevertheless, we permit you to remove it because of the problem of graf sharei. It's disgusting to keep it in the house. And you're not going to want to stay in the house if the items are there. So we allow you to remove it to the garbage. Ugshumach zero, notein bo maimu mach zero. When you bring it back, you can't just carry it back because the utensil is disgusting. It was just used for urine. It was used for feces. So it's a disgusting. You have to pour water into it to either to wash it out or to mitigate the urine or the feces that are in there. And then you can carry it back. Otherwise, it'll be muksa to carry it back. Savramina, the Talmidim, wanted to conclude from Shmuel's statement, the graf sharei agav mona in pifnei atzmo lo. The only way you're allowed to remove something that is problematic, that is disgusting to you, is if it's inside of a kli. But if it was standalone, then you wouldn't be able to remove it. For instance, if there were feces right on the ground, you wouldn't be able to remove it. It's only because the feces were inside of the kli that you could carry out the kli and dump it, because you're doing it agav the kli, so it's okay. That's what they thought to conclude from Shmuel's statement. The Gemara says it's not true. Tashma. Da'uach barto dishtakach bei isparmike de Ravashi. They found this, whether it's a weasel or a mouse, that was inside of the spice area of Ravashi. Amru Ravashi, nokta bitzutzita vavkua. Take it out. Grab it by its tail, Rashi says. You can say grab it by its whiskers and toss it out. So here you have a grafsho ri'i because the animal was inside of its spice closet or its spice area. So it's disgusting. So how do you remove it? You would say if it's only a gav kli, you'd have to carry it with the kli. He says, no, grab it by its tail, grab it by its whiskers, and toss it out. From here we see that even when you directly interact with the problematic item, you're allowed to remove it if it's a problem of graf sharei. Now, you can look at the two small Tosafot here. One says, shofech vishoneh. The ma'adisak adatcha dairi le'el bedelef shenu ra'oi lo, kasha, heicha mitaltele, havalei kalkala va'evin bitocha. Says, according to the assumption of the Gemara before, that the drip that was here was a drip that was not potable water. How come you're allowed to carry it out? You now have muksa inside of a kli. You have a drip that is muksa that is now going inside of a kli. Why are you allowed to dump it out? It's the equivalent of having a basket that has a stone inside of it. It says, v'yesh lomar, mishorid mishum dabi graf shuri'i, chen mashmem demaitilei hocha. That's what makes sense from over here. That this idea of graf shuri'i allows you to take even items that are muksa out. So even if the item that's falling into the kli is muksa, graf shuri'i permits you to remove it. And that's one important point that Tosafot makes. The second important point that Tosafot makes is Teituli de Avri Amar. Tosafot says, Svirle de Rabba de Hacha Shori Mishum Seido. The Rabba must hold that the reason that you're allowed to do this or make a graf sharei l'chatchila is because of loss. So, Yechil, that was what you were asking. The reason that you're allowed to make a graf sharei l'chatchila is only because there was a great loss here. Generally, we don't allow you to make it into a graf sharei, but because here there was a significant loss involved, he allowed you to make a graf sharei l'chadchila. That's one answer of Tosafot. The other answer of Tosafot is, inami o mishom delo mikre l'chadchila kol kach hocha. Here it's not called l'chadchila, because it is his house. It's not like he left his house and he's going out to the area of the mill. He had a separate house for it. In his house, he had his bedroom. He also had the mill. So he just moved his bed from this room to the other room. So the fact that he made it l'chadchila into a graf sharei is not so true here, because it's his home, it's where he's living. If you make a graf sharei l'chadchila is when you change the whole dynamic of the area. So that'll be a problem. That's when you say you can't make a graf sharei l'chadchila. Over here, where he moves his bed from one room to the other, that's not called making a graf sharei l'chadchila. So it has to do with the degrees of what it means to make a graf sharei l'chadchila. So these are important distinctions because they have halachic ramifications in terms of graf sharei. When do we allow you to remove things? And can you create situations in which you'll need to remove things? That all depends on which answer in Tosafot you follow, as well as the discussion that we just had here about the muksa and items that are muksa that fall into an item. Are you allowed to remove them if they are a graf sharei?
Why do you need to make a graf sharei? Why can't you just take it because it
has to move? The only reason you're allowed to move a kli shemakto l'isor is for tzarach makomo and tzarach gufo. There is no dispensation, what's be called mechama detzel. Because it's going to lose money or be ruined, you're not allowed to move it. Kli shemakto l'isor, the mill is a kli shemakto l'isor. There is no dispensation to move it just because it's going to lose money or it's going to be ruined. You need another dispensation, which is that of graf sharei, in order to, of course,
the bottom line is you do it anyway.
So you're asking, okay, if you're going to do it anyway, why make it into a graf sharei? Just move it out in the end. The answer is because when we force you to do that, the dispensation is very limited. By doing that, we force you to understand the dispensation is all because of graf sharei. and Hefsei Merubah together. If we just let you take it out, then we're going to give you the wrong message, which is that even when it's not Hefsei Merubah, people are going to start to take it out. So what we try to do is we force you to make it into an unusual circumstance or unique circumstance so that you understand that this dispensation is unique to this circumstance and not just a general dispensation, which is important. And the Gemara talks about that with Shinoi all the time. Why do we force you to do it the Shinoi? So you shouldn't come to think that this is allowed all the time, or you can do this in a regular way. It's a way to stop people from extrapolating a specific din. All right, next Mishnah. Kol shechayvin ala mishum shvut, mishum reshut, mishum mitzvah. B'Shabbat, chayvin ala b'yom tov. So anything that on Shabbat is a problem because of shvut, reshut, or mitzvah, so too on Yom Tov. And that there's no differentiation here between Shabbat and Yom Tov in these items. Now, what are these items? You have shvut, reshut, and mitzvah. So, elehem ishum shvut. What is a shvut? So, a shvut is something that is an isur derabanan, that has no semblance of mitzvah, or any type of positive side to it, totally optional, totally, quote-unquote, secular in nature. It's something that you do for your personal benefit, but the chamim restricted it for whatever reason. So, for instance, here, the Gemara gives you, elehem ishum shvut. Lo olim b'ilan. You're not allowed to climb up onto a tree on Shabbat. Lo rochvim al gabi beima. You can't ride an animal on Shabbat. Velo shatin al pnei amayim. You're not allowed to float. You're not allowed to swim on Shabbat. Velo mitapchim. Now Rashi translates mitapchim means you can't clap. Velo misapkim is that you can't hit your hand on your thigh. Velo merakdim and you can't dance. So these are all items that are shvut. Now in terms of mitapchim and misapkim, Rashi here says mitapchim is to clap and misapkim is to hit your thigh. The one problem with that, pointed out by Tosafot and Moed Katan, is that the Torah has the word clapping only once. It only appears once in the Torah, and that is by the case of Balak. Balak, it says, by spoke et kapav. And over there, it sounds like he is clapping his hands. Kapav means a kapayim shalom, his hands. According to Rashi, that lo misapkim means that you're hitting your thighs, it says, by spoke et kapav. So according to Rashi, that means that he hit both hands onto his thighs, which doesn't seem to be the simple interpretation of it. Rather, it sounds like he clapped his hands together, and that's why he has two hands involved in the process. So Tosafot over there really favors that lo misapkim means don't clap, and lo mitapchim means don't hit your thigh, as opposed to the way Rashi explains it over here. Although Rashi on Chumash seems to indicate that it's clapping. So now, these are items that are restricted mishum shvut. Ve'elei mishum reshut. What is restricted on Shabbat b'shut? Lo donim. Not allowed to adjudicate. Below me kadshim, you can't get engaged. Below chotzim, and you cannot dissolve a problem of yibum. Below me yabmim, you can't perform yibum. Those are all items that are reshut. Ve'elan mishum mitzvah. These are items that are mitzvah. Below makdishim, you're not allowed to be makdish an item. Below marichim, you can't give erech. When you say erech ploni alai, that you have to give their value based on the tables of the Torah at the end of Vayikra. Below machrimim, you can't donate something lecherem, which goes to Berekabait. Below magbim, chuma umaser, you can't remove chumot umaser. Kolelu b'yom tov amro. All these items are restricted on Yom Tov. Kal b'chomer b'Shabbat. Certainly on Shabbat, they are restricted. Ein bein Yom Tov the Shabbat, ela ochel nefesh bilvad. There's no distinction between Yom Tov and Shabbat, except for ochel nefesh. It's a Mishnah that we'll get to in Masechet Megillah. That the only differentiation is ochel nefesh. Again, we've discussed this numerous times. That certainly is not the only difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov. But we talked about how that ochel nefesh is the paradigmatic differentiation between Yom Tov and Shabbat, because it tells you the nature of the day is completely different. That nature of the day tells you that the Isur Malacha is also different between Shabbat and Yom Tov. Now over here you had three categories. You had Shvut, Reshut, and Mitzvah. Rashi explains over here that a mitzvah is something that you're doing a real mitzvah. When you activate it and you do it, it is a mitzvah. Reshut does not mean optional. Reshut means relative to a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, but it's not the same type of mitzvah as a real mitzvah. Not a full-fledged 100% mitzvah. This has big implications for the Shita of Tosafot. Tosafot quotes this in the Gemara in Brachot, as well in other places, when the Gemara says, machlok between whether Ma'ariv is a chova or a reshut. When you daven Ma'ariv, the Gemara there has a machloket, amoraim, as to whether Ma'ariv is reshut or Ma'ariv is chova. Reshut, the way Rashi explains it over there, reshut means completely optional. When you daven Ma'ariv, it's optional. Tosafot says that's not what reshut means in the Gemara. Reshut in the Gemara means relative to a mitzvah or an obligation. When you say Ma'ariv is a chova, I mean you're obligated to daven it. Reshut means that you're not obligated full-fledged. What does that mean? If there's a mitigating factor, then you don't have to daven Ma'ariv. But if there is no other mitigating factor, then you are obligated to daven ma'ariv. That's how he explains Rishud. Rishud is you do it, unless there's something that tells you not to do it. So for instance, you have another mitzvah, you have something else to do that would tell you not to daven ma'ariv. That's what it means that ma'ariv is a Rishud. It doesn't mean totally optional to decide if you want to daven it. He bases it over here. The word Rishud is used over here relative to mitzvah. It doesn't mean Rishud is completely optional. It means that you have a full-fledged mitzvah, then you have Rishud, which is a quasi-mitzvah, not a full-fledged mitzvah. Then you have Shvut. Shvut is something where you're not involved in a mitzvah at all, which is something that's completely not a mitzvah. You're not engaged in any mitzvah, they're just still restricted. So those are the three categories of our Mishnah. In all of these cases, the Chachamim restricted you. Why they restricted you? We're right now. So the Gemara says, Lo olim bi'ilan. Why can't you climb into a tree? Gzeira shemi yitlosh. Maybe you're going to break a branch. You'll take something off the tree. Lo rochvim agavi beima. Why can't you ride an animal? Gzeira shemi yitzei chutz l'tchum. Because you might exit the tchum. Because when you're walking, you'll see the marks or the demarcations for the tchum. When you're riding on an animal, it's not as obvious, you can't see it. Shmamina, tchumim doraita. The only reason you would say you can't ride an animal because of tchum is if you think tchum is a problem in a Torah. So therefore, the Chachamim made a gzeira, don't ride animals, so you won't go out of tchum. But if tchum is only derabonon, then the Chachamim are making a gzeira the gzeira. They're saying, don't go out of the tchum, and then they're saying, don't ride an animal because you might go out of the tchum. Exgera exgera. Gemara says you must conclude from this that tchumer doraita. Ella, that can't be the reason. Exgera shema yachtoch zmora. Problem is that you might break a branch off to drive the animal. So the problem here is not a problem of tchum. Tchum is derabanan. So the problem here is that you might break a branch to drive the animal, and that'll be the problem on Shabbat. Obviously, that's an isur deoraita. Below shatino pneamayim, you're not allowed to swim or float on the water. Gzeira shem yaseh chavit shel shayatin. Because you make a flotation device. So the way Rashi explains chavit shel shayatin is kli shel guma. It's made out of reeds, shorgim. You weave these reeds, and you make it into a chavit aruka. You make it into a long thing, vilameidim bodashut. And you teach people how to swim like that. It's the equivalent of floaties, or the noodles that they have here that they used to teach kids how to float or to swim. So you might make one of those, and that's what we're fearful of, that you'll be oreg, and you'll make one of those on Shabbat or Yom Tov, and that's why you can't swim. Tosafot takes issue with that, and he says it doesn't seem to be the reason. He says that it's really a kli cheres. It's really an earthenware utensil. It's a sealed earthenware utensil that has air inside of it. So it won't submerge because the air is captured inside. There's no way to escape, and therefore it'll always be buoyant. So that's why it's a flotation device over here, and it floats along the top of the water. So that's what he describes as the device. Both problems are that you might make it. If you make such an item on Yom Tov or Shabbat in order to float in the water, that's our fear, because those are Isurim Doraita to make them. So we don't allow you to swim, because you might make a raft, you might make some sort of object to float with you or help you to float. That's a separate issue, a secondary issue, which is you might come to Schita afterwards. But the primary issue is mentioned here by the Gemara is making a raft or making some sort of flotation device. The secondary issues are that once you exit the water, then what's the story with the water that's on you? Can you deal with that? In terms of drying off, there are ways to get around it, but we try to avoid them because they're very difficult in terms of not getting into problems of Schita. All right, you cannot slap your thighs, clap your hands, or dance. Gzeira shema itakin kli shir. Gzeira is put in place because you might come to fix or tune musical instruments. You're going to fix up the musical instrument because these items are all associated with music. Since they're associated with music, therefore, we say if you let you do this, you're going to come to fix the kli. Tosafot back on Daf Lamed says that maybe this does not have application today because we don't fix musical instruments or we clap without having musical instruments. So the two are not necessarily correlated anymore. It's not automatic because you clap that you're going to tune in musical instruments, either because not everybody knows how to tune them, or because we don't always have music and clapping together. They're not always associated. Therefore, Tosafot wants to suggest possibly that they don't apply anymore, that these dinim don't apply to us today. Now, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the din is like this, like the Gemara says, you can't do this, Shema Yitakein Kli. The Ramah brings down the halacha and he says, "Mutav shiu shogegim v'altu mezidim." Says that we know people do this and they're clapping on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Don't stop them because if you stop them, they're not going to listen anyway, and they'll be mezidim. So mutav shiu shogegim v'altu mezidim. So his dispensation is just because people are ignorant, not because there's really a dispensation. They don't hook on to the dispensation of Tosafot. He just says, listen, people are doing it, they're not going to listen to us, so better not tell them about it.
And then the Ramah quotes the Tosafot,
and says that possibly, and he quotes the Tosafot as the source for that. The Mishnah Berurah writes that only b'makom mitzvah is it kedai lahakel and not say anything. And in a case where it's not b'makom mitzvah, then you have to invoke the other principle of the Ramah. That's mutav shushogim ve'altu mezidim. If you look in the Ber Alocha, he quotes from Rabbi Kiva Eger, who was adamantly against the practice of dancing and breaking any minhag Yisrael gzerat chachamim, even though possibly that the time had gone. And therefore he says you should be mocha and should stop them from dancing on Shabbat and Yom Tov. And Shmirat Shabbat, Kilchata, only brings it down to be mekil in the case where it's mogum mitzvah, or you do it b'derech shinui. You have to do it in an unusual way. You have to clap in a differentiated way, not the normal way that you do on chol. Or if you dance, you have to do it in a manner that doesn't engender any type of kleshir or in a context that wouldn't involve kleshir. There are other poskim that are willing to take up the heter of Tosafot and say that it just doesn't apply today because the engagement with musical instruments and fixing or making musical instruments is just not relevant today. Therefore, the gzera goes away. Which brings up the broader question of, when do gzerot fall away and when do they not fall away? We have many gzerot where the reason is gone, but we still keep the gzerah. Over here, all of a sudden, Tosfot says that the reason's gone, so the gzerah is gone. Again, I mentioned this earlier, I mentioned Rabbi Shechter, that difference between gzerot. Certain gzerot are put in place as a gzerah, and then afterwards, they give you the reason for the gzerah. Other gzerot are put in place simply because the whole gzerah is premised on the reason. So over here, the whole reason for not dancing or not clapping is because Shem Yitak and Klei Shir. If you take away the reason, the gzera falls away by itself. In other gzerot, the chachamim put the gzera in place, and then later on they explain to us what the reasoning was. But that in those cases, the gzera was first, the reason was secondary. And when the reason is secondary over there, the gzera stands even when the reason is gone or is dissipated. Right now, elein mishum reshut. These are items that are mishum reshut. Lo danim, you know how to adjudicate. So this is Shaul's question. Ba mitzvah kovid. What do you mean? Being dana din is a mitzvah. So what do you mean that you're not doing a mitzvah? There's someone who's more qualified to adjudicate than he is. So as someone who's more qualified, he doesn't have to do this adjudication because the mitzvah is incumbent upon someone else. So he's not really obligated to do it. Now, if he does it, he is accomplishing a small mitzvah, but it's really not his obligation. Whereas if it's someone who is the most qualified, it's his obligation, it would be a mitzvah. So now based on the Gemara here, what happens if you are the most qualified individual? The way the Gemara, you should be allowed to do it. That's a machloket in Tosafot. Tosafot brings both Stadim down. That one side that says that yes, eino chanami, if you're the most qualified, you can adjudicate. The Retainer Tam suggests yes, you can do it because there's a full-fledged mitzvah. Others suggest in Tosafot that that's not the case. And you cannot do it. Even if you're the most qualified, you're still disqualified or you can't do it. We'll say because the Gemara is going to say this later on, shemeichtov, form of writing. There's a possibility that you might write, and that might apply even to the most qualified member. V'lo mikadshim, you're not allowed to get married. Va mitzvah kovid, aren't you doing a mitzvah when you get married? Lo, tzvicha, ditle isha ubanim. He already has a wife and children. So therefore, it's not a full-fledged mitzvah, because he's already accomplished the mitzvah of peru or vu. So there's a secondary mitzvah, which is that you still should have children, and that you should remain married. All of these things are secondary in nature. And therefore, it's not a full-fledged mitzvah. Again, the same question comes up, which is, what happens if he isn't married? Or if he doesn't have children? That would imply that it's a full-fledged mitzvah and it should be permitted. So that same stud stadim in Tosafot will come up here again, which is, do we say if it's a full-fledged mitzvah, you can go ahead and get married and have kiddushin on Yom Tov or on Shabbat? Or do we say no, that you're not allowed to do it at all? But the Gemara here is talking about even in a case where he has Yishur by name, he still can't do it because it's a problem. So now, what's interesting here, this is a pivotal item in the Machloket about whether Kiddushin is a mitzvah or not. Machloket HaRishonim as to whether Kiddushin is a mitzvah, this plays an important role in it. The Gemara here says about V'lo Mikadshim, a mitzvah Govit, he's doing a mitzvah. Makes it sound like Kiddushin is a mitzvah. If you look in Rashi, how does Rashi explain it? It's Ravitch, you know, say Isha, the fruit for the boat. What does Rashi say the mitzvah is? The mitzvah is Peru or Vu. Kiddushin is just a Hechitimsa. It's a facilitator that allows you to do the mitzvah of Peru or Vu. You have to jump through the hoop of Kiddushin in order to get to Peru or Vu. But what's the real mitzvah here? The mitzvah is Peru or Vu. That is a Machloket Rishonim. The Rosh believes that there is no mitzvah of Kiddushin. It's simply a mitzvah of Peru or Vu, and Kiddushin is just a Hechitimsa. On the other hand, the Rambam, in the Sefer Mitzvot counts Kiddushin as a separate mitzvah, a mitzvah independent of Peru or Vu. And it's major Machloket Rishonim And here, this Gemara is obviously an important Gemara in that. First of all, it calls it a Reshut Kiddushin. Then it calls it a mitzvah. And what mitzvah are you speaking about? And why is it not a mitzvah once you have Peru or Vuk? All these relate to that question as to whether Kiddushin is standalone mitzvah or is Kiddushin just a facilitator for Peru or Vuk. You can see Rashi clearly believes that it's just a facilitator for Peru or Vuk. And the Rosh also feels that way in the Gemara Kiddushin, as there was the Rambam and others believe that it's a full-fledged mitzvah. It also has implications about Birkat Erusin. Is it Birkat Erusin and Birkat HaMitzvah? Or if you believe it's not a mitzvah, then what type of bracha is it? It's a bracha of Shevach Vodah. You have to come up with other reasons why we make the bracha, and also when we make the bracha. We make the bracha after the Kiddushin, before the Kiddushin. All of these have implications depending on whether you think Kiddushin is a mitzvah. Alright, Lo Cholzim Lo Miyabim. Nanadu Chalitza Yibum. Bar mitzvah kavod. Again, you're doing a mitzvah when you do chalitza yibam. Lo tzricha d'ika gadol. He has an older brother. Umitzvah begadol yabim. It's a mitzvah incumbent on the oldest to do yibam. That's based on the drashot and psukim. We'll get to a masechet yibamot. Kulu taimamai. What's the reasoning behind all of these? Okay, you're saying, okay, fine. It's not a full-fledged mitzvah. But why can't you do them? My says, zera shema yichtov. Problem that you might write. In all these cases, with Kiddushin, you might write down. Ketubah, you might write other items down. Case of Yibum, Chalitza, there's reasons to write. Adjudication, there are reasons to write. All these cases, there are reasons to write. So Shema Yichtov is the problem underlying all of these items. Tosfot says, whether they're a full-fledged mitzvah or just a quasi-mitzvah, you still have the problem of Shema Yichtov. According to some day, it's only when it's a subpar mitzvah do we say Shema Yichtov is a problem. But it's a full-fledged mitzvah, we're going to say, go ahead. The Chamim didn't stop you in that case. That's like the other Shita on the Tosafot that you can do them. All right, last item that we'll do for today, which is, Ve'elehem Mishum Mitzvah, Lo Maktishim, Ve'lo Marichim, Ve'lo Machrimim. You can't do any of these items. You can't be Maktish, you can't be Marich, you can't be Machrim. Gzeira Mishum Mekachum Hemkar. It looks like you're transacting, as Rashi says over here, because you're changing ownership. You're moving something from your ownership into Ekdesh's ownership. That's the equivalent of Mekach and Memkar exchanging, transacting. And that's the problem over here. Now, what's the problem with Mekach and Memkar? Why can't you transact on Shabbat or Yom Tov? Right, they kept the stores open, but you had to do it in an unusual way that it wasn't real Mekach and Memkar. But why aren't you allowed to just do regular Mekach and Memkar? Why can't you just sell things on a regular basis on Yom Tov or Shabbat? Rashi over here brings, Mekach and Memkar, Dama Shemotim, Reshut, Reshut. Mekach and Memkar, Asur Min HaMikra. Mekach Memkar is a sur from the Novi, from the Pasuk in Yishayahu, which is, Mimtso Chetzecha Vidaber Davar. That you can't do your Chafatzim. You can do Chetze Shemayim, but you can't deal with your Chafatzim on Yom Tov and Shabbat. Vidaber Davar, which is that you have to speak only words of Shabbat and Yom Tov, not words of Kol, which is to engage in business activities would be problematic. Rashi quotes this Pasuk here. I mentioned earlier, that Rashi back on Daf Kov Zayin Amud Bet brings a different reason. He brings the Psukim from Nehemiah, which we read, where Nehemiah shuts down Yerushalayim and doesn't allow people to transact. That is a different source for the fact in the Navi that you're not allowed to transact or have business on Shabbat. And then Rashi brings a third reason, which is, Inami Mekach Mechmar Alti Lidei Ktiva. Very simple. Transacting ends up in documentation. Documentation is likelihood that you're going to write. When you transact, it's very likely that you're going to write, and since likely you're going to write, that's the problem of Mekach and Memkar. So you have three different reasons as to why Mekach and Memkar would be problematic on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Two from the Navi, one from the Navi in Nehemiah, one from the Navi Yishayahu, and the last one being based on what we just saw here in the Gemara, Vegzera Shema Yichtov. That could be a problem of possibly writing or documenting a shtar on Shabbat or Yom Tov. Okay, we'll stop over here.